ring if you're ready to care.
And what is good, everybody? It is your boy, We Too Deep, and we are back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Community Show, where we are going to break down some of the latest in professional wrestling and the NFL, recording Monday, November 10th. It is 8 p.m. Monday Night Football is just getting ready to go under. I'm recording in a location where down the stairs they are watching the Eagles and they are loud fans. So you might hear some Go Birds chants or the theme song. Depends on how the Eagles play. You might hear some expletives if the Packers decide to beat up the Eagles badly, so just a fair warning, right, that's what's going on. No one's dying or anything like that, right? Without further ado, not going to waste any more time. Let's jump into the show. Before we talk about the wrestling news that I want to talk about, then get into the football news that I want to talk about. I want to talk about, as we're slowly approaching the end of 2025, we have, I believe, 7 or 8 weeks left in the month, in the year. And as we approach, typically what I would do when this was just a wrestling podcast would be, you know, we would record an end of the year awards show, and then we would sort of take a break, and that's still going to happen, right? I've been contemplating over the last couple days if I wanted to continue to talk about at least the football portion, being that we're in the middle of football season. And I'm going to be honest, during the holidays and all of that, I really don't want to be doing much of anything having to do with podcasting. It's sort of why I always choose to take, you know, the 2 or 3 weeks around Christmas and New Year's off, is to sort of refresh around those holidays with traveling and everything, and not being able to have to, or not forcing myself to, you know, the stress of having to record an episode. So with that being said, this year's end of the year show will be recorded on December the 16th. That is a Tuesday. And will include me, We Too Deep, Junkyard James, and Cody Marinara from the Beyond the Junkyard podcast. Card subject to change. I may add some more people. I may throw out some feelers if other people may want to come back. I know we had a great end of the year show last year with some of the guests that were on, very unique perspectives. I'll say this. I'll go ahead and announce the categories that we are going to go over. So the normal: male wrestler of the year, female wrestler of the year, PLE of the year, stuff like that, right? So those are 4. We're going to throw in tag team of the year, booker of the year, best gimmick of the year, the feud of the year. Here's 2 that are new to the end of the year things that I do. The worst business decision of the year. This is sort of taking a little bit of homage from what Dave Meltzer likes to do. He does an award similar to this. I would love to know what James and Cody say on that. That's going to be a fun one. The next one, a new one, worst booking decision of the year. And then we'll end with sort of four, not necessarily awards, but just things contemplating on this year with, you know, end essentially talking about 2025 by giving our thoughts on the final year of John Cena. I strategically placed the recording of it to the 16th so that Cena's career will be over at that point. We can give our thoughts on his final year. We're going to talk about 2026. AJ Styles is retiring and asking the question, what matches, sort of contemplating as a group, especially Cody, who's a big AJ Styles fan. What matches does this tour of this last year need to include for AJ Styles? And then ending how we always do with three males and three females to look forward to and look out for in 2026. And so that is going to be, again, like I said, recorded on December the 16th. And so that's sort of the housekeeping for this episode. One final thing as I'm recording it on Monday. It is the 250th anniversary birthday, per se, for the United States Marine Corps. The episode will be released at 8 a.m. Tuesday morning, Eastern time, when you guys will see this or hear this. That'll be Veterans Day. So I want to send a message of thanks to all the veterans who have served in our armed forces. If you are a listener and you are a military member, thank you. If you know a veteran or have family that are veterans, as I do, that, you know, thank them, you know, and just remember, especially if you're listening from America, just remember that what you're doing and what I'm doing isn't afforded to everyone in the world. Like what I'm doing right now, talking into a microphone, staring at a computer and my phone, looking at the notes that I'm going to talk about and all of that, and you guys listening to this through an audio play device in some way, shape, or form, if you're in America, like, that doesn't come without a cost. And I think a lot of times, myself included, we tend to forget that the life and the freedom that we have in America, we sort of are ingrained and entitled to think that that didn't come at a cost, that that's just sort of what we deserve. And that's far from the truth. And so I just think a veteran, to all the veterans in the audience that are listening, thank you. Just remember on, you know, as you listen to this, that we're kind of blessed to be in this situation. I'm not saying America's perfect, right? There's actually a question that Kara asked at the end. We're going to end the podcast with that, asks like, what would I change about America, right? And I can't wait to answer that question. But with that, let's dive on in. There's really only one thing, as we go in the ropes, as we like to call this segment, there's really only one wrestling related topic that I want to talk about at length. I'll mention some other things, like Chelsea Green became U.S. champion with Julia. And I know this might be an overreaction, but I feel like the WWE's main roster is really ruining Julia. I know that might be an overreaction. I know a big push is probably coming. But, like, Julia used to be, like, one of the biggest names. And it feels like, to me, like, Stephanie Vaquer, I've said this before, that Stephanie Vaquer is definitely the better of the two. And so it makes sense why she's already getting that large push. But Julia's also just as good. And I feel like they've really slowed her into a potential championship picture. I don't know necessarily what the benefit is of having Chelsea be a dual champion. Maybe other than it sort of matches Ethan Page. Now they both hold two titles. I don't know really what the big story behind all of this is. I don't. But I'll say this. I don't watch the show all that much. So I really... It's really not something that I want to complain about. Because... We already know the booking is kind of bad, right? I saw a joke post in, earlier today. Sorry. Saw an earlier post today about, like, Nick Aldis being the worst GM in wrestling. Or in SmackDown's, like, history, talking about this. Now, I think it's kind of stupid to sort of be like, oh, they had the worst viewing ever. It's Nick Aldis. Now, I get it. He's the GM. You're trying to play kayfabe. I get it. But at the same time, like, these type of booking decisions, I don't know who WWE's booking for anymore. Like, at one point, Triple H tries to book for the Marks and the IWC. And then at another turn, it appears like he's booking for the casuals or the less hardcore fan. So I don't really know who WWE's booking for. But that's not really what I want to waste time on now that we're in the ropes in this segment here. What I want to talk about is this Nixon Newell situation and with her partner on screen. I don't necessarily know her name. I'm beyond with you. I think it's like Miranda something or other. And so this thing has... Ever since, you know, this started on Saturday. And from Saturday till today, this thing has really progressed. And so I'm going to read the first post I saw on Saturday and give my initial reaction to this post. And then we'll continue. I'll read the next post that I saw and respond to that. And then there's a new update that I got today that I kind of laughed at, and I'll give my reaction to that as well. So this is from a wrestling page, and they're crediting PW Insider that I see this from. It says, Nixon Newell and Miranda Elise, I think is how you say her name, refused to lose in their second appearance for AEW and left the taping. The duo were scheduled to put over Tay Mello and Anna Jay earlier tonight, Saturday, on Collision, but walked out at the booking because they had already lost in their official debut. They left the taping about an hour before bell time and were replaced by Han. I don't know if I pronounced that name. It's an Asian name. And Maya World. It is said that AEW was appreciative of those two stepping up and gained points internally. Neither Nixon nor Elise were believed to be under AEW contract at this juncture. So my initial response to this, my initial thought to this, and this was a question I posed in the Discord, wasn't Nixon Newell the one earlier complaining this year that she couldn't get bookings, right? She was complaining about not getting any bookings. And so my initial reaction was, so she finally gets booked, and she walks out of the booking because she's going to lose. So we then get an update. We get an update that from Fightful, right? That they then confirmed yesterday on a Twitch stream that they were at Dynamite on. Excuse me. This was supposed to be for Dynamite. Oh, sorry. That they were at Dynamite on Wednesday. But there was nothing for them on that show. They came in on Saturday for a Collision. Were given a match, and they said that they presented ideas and were informed of a short match. Apparently, they were given like 3-minute bell time. And they decided that after the promo that they did, that match wouldn't benefit anyone. They say that they told AEW that they appreciated it. And that there wasn't any negativity or harsh walk out and spoke to everyone involved. And that they were told that they were free to leave if they wanted. And so there's that. I don't know how much I believe of that. So before I announce what and talk about what happened today, let's just talk about this whole situation. Let's where we're at right now. They're in this women's tag team tournament, right? They're called to do a job to Anna Jay and Tay Mello, who are going to be one of the big duos in this new division, and they decide, hey, we don't want to lose, and we don't want to lose in 3 minutes because it will make us look bad. And so we're just not going to show up. Now, this type of action in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s would get you blackballed from the entire industry, right? If you walked out of a booking, that would spread like wildfire. People would not book you, right? Now, this is going to be surprising because typically, and I know my OG listeners are probably waiting for one of my famous quotes that I always say, famous lines that I always say when I talk about something that happens on AEW, which is always something along the lines of, and this is how it's Tony Khan's fault. You're going to have to wait because I will say this. I think Tony Khan looks like a pushover, because he allowed them to walk out. With that being said, I don't think Tony Khan's at fault here. Tony Khan had a situation. He had an idea of how he wanted to present who I think are actually going to win the titles in Tay Mello and Anna Jay. You have this situation where, hey, you're supposed to put them over. We need them to look dominant, so it's going to be a short 3-minute match. Please go out there and do the job. And your workers, your jobbers say, well, no, we don't want to do the job. It's not enough time. This is absolutely insane to me. This is that entitlement. You know, a lot of people get mad at some of the old heads who talk about, well, this new generation is entitled, that they think they're owed screen time. Neither Miranda nor Nixon Newell. For those who don't know who Nixon Newell is, it's Tegan Nox from WWE. She was known as Tegan Nox, but Nixon Newell. And this girl Miranda, I've never heard of her before, but you're called in to do a job on the second biggest wrestling company in the country, possibly in the industry, and you saying, you know what, it's not enough time. Even though you don't have a contract, you're not guaranteed time, and they didn't have to call you to put you on TV, right? And so, if you would have done this, you know, in the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you wouldn't be booked again, definitely for that company, but probably from a lot of other companies. And so I could see the argument that someone could make that said, hey, Tony should have forced them to stay. Now, I don't necessarily think he should have forced them. I think he has this idea that, hey, they're grown adults, and I actually agree with that. These two are grown adults. They say they want to, you know, they want TV time, but when they're given TV time, like, TV time is something you earn. It isn't something that's just given to you. I'm not blaming WWE for this, but WWE over the longest time has given this idea that, you know, you don't have to earn your way on the Mania card. You don't have to. Triple H is starting to do that. But this idea for the longest time was just like you put the entire roster on Mania. And, oh, well, so-and-so's not on Mania, so they must be disrespected, or right? Or there's this idea on the independents, there's this idea that if you don't have a certain amount of time in your match, if your match goes only 3 minutes and you don't get to do all the spots and stuff, that must be a bad match. And I don't necessarily agree with that idea. And so I don't think this is Tony Khan's fault. I don't think Tony Khan sat here and said, you know, I'm going to be walked over today. But what I think he did do was say, well, we don't have any plans for them anyway. We don't necessarily need them. We're not going to make a mountain out of a molehill where it doesn't need to be one, right? We have replacements here. The same match that I had already got planned, we can easily put in these replacements. Let's, you know, if they want to leave, so be them. Now, where Tony Khan will lose some of my respect is if he books Nixon Newell or Miranda Elise ever again. If he books them again, now, Tony, you're going to lose some of my respect, because they disrespected you by saying that you being gracious enough to put us on your TV show, you know, and booking us, but we didn't like it, so we're just going to leave. We don't appreciate that, you know, we want more time, but we don't have a contract, you know, and Tony's saying, well, earn some time, maybe you can earn a contract, go do the job, and maybe I can give you a contract. We see something in you. That's why we called you. Right? And they said, well, no, that's not good enough. Tony Khan better not call them again to work. I know I wouldn't. You know, if I was the promoter and you come to my show and I spend, you know, all week long booking and preparing a show, and you tell me, oh, I don't think that this is good enough. If you do that to me and you walk out, expect to never come back if I was the booker, right? You're not getting any more of my time. Like, just go ahead and expect that. Because obviously you don't care enough about your own brand. Like, this has made them look bad, in my opinion. And I don't know of any other way to look at it, if I'm being honest with you. I really don't know of any other way to look at this situation. So then it comes out today that Nixon Newell is going to step away from wrestling. And I'm not sure the reasoning. I didn't look that deep into it. But that was sent in the Discord by B-Master. And my initial response is, she's too mentally unstable. I said, bro, she's mentally unstable, it appears. Right? And so, I think Nixon Newell bought the juice or bought into her own ego and thought that she was better than she was. And I think a lot of wrestlers on the indies feel that way. So there's one other aspect, and this is a community show, so I want to bring up some of the things being said about this in the community, Kara brought up this idea, that AEW fans can't say anything anymore about them keeping the indies alive. I was a little confused, and so B-Master looks like he was as well. He says, "I don't understand what you mean." And Kara comes back and says, "For the last year, I've been getting an earful from people like James that, oh, we take care of our indie talents. This situation proves everything he's been saying is bullshit. And they use them as much as WWE does." So I agree with her in premise. I 100% believe that what James and people like him mean, what I get out of when they say, oh, we keep the indies alive, I think they believe that Tony Khan treats independent wrestling better than WWE. This is sort of going to be covered. So WWE ID, a program James doesn't believe works and is just a hoarding of talent. They're trying to crown a new number one contender, and in doing so, they're essentially signing the next class of WWE ID. And they released the list of 5 of the 6 names in the 6-way match. Or maybe it's a tournament. I don't actually know the details off the top of my head. Let me go back and find it. I thought I had it. Yeah, so it's an elimination match. Okay, so it is an elimination. Okay. So 5 of the 6 competitors. And those are, and I'm going to name them as they were announced this weekend. So the first one that they announced is Brittany Brooks. Now, if you remember, I don't know if I talked about her on the podcast or just in the Discord, but Brittany Brooks is one of those girls. She's Chris Bay's girlfriend, by the way. She's only 20 years old, and I think she could be the future of wrestling on the independent scene in the women's division. I think she's really, really good. She works mostly out west, so I haven't been able to see her in person. But she's one of the greater women's. I think what's happening, a lot of women who are getting into wrestling are getting in young, and they're really good young. And so there's a lot of women who are really good, but who are a little bit more advanced in age. Like, someone I would love to see in this would be someone like Vicious Vicky that I had on the podcast, back in March or April, right? And she's like 31. And I think, 31, 10 years ago would have been like, yeah, we'll take you. We'll consider you to develop you. But I think, with how good of talent, hey, we can get someone that's 20, younger. We can, if we eventually end up signing her, right? Now, this could always end up like a Zeta Steel situation, where they sign, and she no longer, she doesn't re-sign the contract. But Brittany Brooks is very good. Probably my favorite to win the thing. The next one is Notorious Mimi. Speaking of Vicious Vicky, Notorious Mimi is someone she brought up in our interview. Like, her biggest rival on the indies is Notorious Mimi. If you're an NXT fan and you know NXT talent, even the developmental talent, you'll know Notorious Mimi from her NXT name the last time she was in the company back before COVID. I think she was released during COVID, like early 2020, 2021. She went by the name of Sloane Jacobs. She was actually in the first women's breakout tournament, I believe. It was the one with Nikita, Tatum Paxley was in there. Lash Legend was in there. Roxanne was in that one. Fallon Henley was in that. And so there's like a picture that goes around where it's Roxanne, Tatum, Fallon, Nikita Lyons, and Lash Legend are the five of the six. And everyone always cuts out Sloane Jacobs because she's no longer with the company. And she's really the only one who hasn't found much success, you know, in the WWE system. But Notorious Mimi's really good. Really good. And then they released someone named Tiara, or they released the name Tiara James is another one. She's big up north in the Northeast. I don't know much about her, but I'm seeing, you know, things in the comments saying she's good. She's a queen. You know, she's beautiful. I don't know her age and all. I don't know her story. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about her. And then fourth is someone that Junkyard James would love. I sort of learned about her last year. Her name is, I think it's pronounced Erica. It's spelled A-I-R-I-C-A. Erica Demia. She's really good. She's really good. My biggest issue with her is she's too much of a... It looks like she likes to do cosplay in her wrestling gear, and I'm not the biggest fan of that. Give me something that shows me your personality outside of, well, I'm an anime girl, right? And that's a conversation probably for another podcast. I feel like, and I'll just say this, I feel like I'm the only person in the planet right now that has never watched anime and has no desire to watch anime. I feel like it's like the one thing that I'm left out of. You know, I'm in another Discord server. I've talked about it. It's the like Christian dating one that I'm in. I feel like everyone there loves anime. It's something that they talk about all the time. And I feel like, you know, I can't participate in this. I have no idea what you're talking about right now. And I can't say what I'm thinking, because that's a little rude, like, bro, you, right? So, I mean, if you like it, you like it. But I feel like as a wrestling character, and this goes with a lot of wrestlers in general, give me something fresh. Give me you. Don't give me your favorite anime character as your ring gear, right? And then number five, someone I've never heard of until now, Shannon Lavangi, I think is how it's pronounced. I've never heard of this person. And then the sixth name, I guess they considered 17 talents. This event is going to happen at our indie show in Rhode Island. And so they're going to start the show with basically the rest of the competitors they thought through are going to be in a match, the winner of which gets to be the sixth member in this. Anyway, I bring that up to mention that, you know, AEW does very little, you know, in actually helping the independents, right? WWE is giving, you know, to the average fan who doesn't pay attention to the indies, and they follow the WWE pages, and they see five names that they maybe have never heard of before, that does a lot more impress than having them do a 30-minute match, a 30-minute banger, and ever bringing them back again. I think WWE cares about the indies more than AEW does. That's just my take. So I do agree with Kara on that AEW fans, they really, you know, now, I'm not 100% certain. Maybe she can explain in the Discord what could have Tony Khan done different to show that he cared about the indies. I feel like this is a situation where Tony just, you know, I don't think he wanted to deal with any drama. And so, hey, Tony, we don't like that it's only 3 minutes. Okay, well, we have two other women here who are okay taking the pin in 3 minutes. And so if you want to leave, you can leave. That's how I sort of feel like Tony really took that. But with that, let's get out from in the ropes and let's go fourth and deep. Let's talk about some NFL football week 10. It finishes tonight as I'm recording with the Eagles Packers. And that, I don't know how that game's going. I don't have it on or anything. That game, I'm pulling up the score real quick. It's still tied 0-0 at the end of the first. It's going to be an interesting game how that finishes. But either way, before we really get to talking about the rest of the week, what I want to do is I want to send my condolences to Marshawn Neyland and his family. That situation is rough. Condolences out to the Cowboys who lost a teammate. That's just a tough situation. Hearing all the details that happened with it, he was, mentally unstable, it appears, and he was having a breakdown, and he texted his girlfriend saying, I'm going to end it all. So she does what I think any person would have done and tries to get him some help, and he runs from the police and ends it all in a porta potty. And, I mean, he's 24, 3 days removed from scoring his first ever touchdown in the NFL. And I think it brings to the reality that even these people who we see make millions of dollars, that even them, that money isn't happiness, right? You look at someone like Dak Prescott, who, when he signed his contract extension, was the highest paid quarterback in the league. And one of the biggest stories in his career has been sort of his battle with depression. Someone like Lane Johnson, right tackle for the Eagles, who was one of the highest paid players in his position in league history, and his battles with depression. It just goes to show that money isn't ultimately the thing that makes you happy. And so just that whole situation is sad. I'm sure more will come out. I know people immediately wanted to jump on the CTE bandwagon train. I think even speculating what caused him to do this, I don't think that there's going to be a time to do that. I don't think the day he dies and it gets announced that that's appropriate for us to do. I don't even think a week after it happened that it's appropriate to do. I mean, we're less than a week from when it happened as I'm recording this. And I just don't think it's appropriate to be like, oh, he must have had CTE, or I wonder why he snapped. Like, I think it should be more of what can we do to make sure this doesn't happen again? Because no one should ever be in a position. And I understand, he lost his mom, so he just wasn't right. And I just feel like, especially, as a male who lives in America and sort of understands this, he's a football player, he's an athlete, he's expected to sort of be a certain type of, have a certain type of, like, macho appearance. And I wonder if like he held all that in. I don't know. I think it's just disrespectful. Even me, even trying to figure this out, it's not for me to figure out. I don't necessarily think it matters why he did it. The fact is he did it and a young man lost his life. So I think that should be the conversation we should have, is sending condolences, sending thoughts and prayers, and being available for other people who are in that situation. We're entering the end of fall into the winter, and I'll just be open and honest with you. As much as I love the cold weather, I absolutely love that it's it was snowing earlier today where I live, and it's 32 degrees, or literally just changed to 31 with a feels like of 16 degrees right now. And I absolutely love that, right? I love this time of year for the weather, and the leaves are changing and all of that. But I also, every year, sort of am coming to despise this time of year, because I do get seasonal depression from time to time. Now, it's not bad. I don't need anyone, you know, sending the police to do a wellness check. They fucking did it. Excuse me. We're going to go back in between the ropes real quick. Live reaction as we have a new IC champion and John Cena. That's crazy. Anyway, back to Marshawn Lee. That was kind of a disrespectful way to put that, but that was sort of live reaction as I saw it happening. Someone just sent me a message about it. I kind of figured it would happen last time in Boston, but so Cena has won every title now. Good for him. Yeah, so just thoughts and prayers to Marshawn Neal. And what I was trying to say was, you know, I even struggle through. Now, I'm not clinically depressed. I don't need medicine. It's just as the weather changes and it gets darker earlier, it's just, again, I'm fine. I mean, if you want to check on me, you can, but I'm fine. No need to worry about anything like that. But I understand this mindset, right? I understand the, you know, as a man, we got to hold some stuff in. We have to, right? And so I think we have to have these conversations in a way that's productive. That, you know, I think we have these conversations at times, and a lot of times it's women having these conversations saying, oh, men just need to stop being so masculine. And that's not the answer, right? We can't remove masculinity. Like, I think there is an appropriate time for men to have and show and an appropriate way for them to express their emotions. And we definitely don't need both men and women being uber emotional. And so I'm not exactly sure the answer. I think this is one of those things we need to have the conversation about, though. And not in a, well, he must have CTE type way. Like, no, let's, like, be respectful. Understand that a young man took his life. But, you know, when that time comes to have that discussion, I'm not the biggest fan of, I was actually having this conversation earlier with someone who I've been talking to, who's very big into, like, psychology and therapy and counseling. And I think that works for some people, but for some people like me, I sort of shut down when I begin to be treated like a patient, and when I begin to be, you know, when you try to diagnose me in my mental capacity and what's going on in my life, and you try to diagnose me with data points, and so, right, I tend to become more reserved, because I'm not a data point. That's sort of how, like, I don't respond well to therapy, right? I just don't. And that's something she's been, you know, I've had it, because she doesn't quite understand my mindset on it, because she's in that field. She loves the idea of, like, psychology and stuff like that. And I'm like, yeah, but some of us don't want to be a data set. Some of, like, and so I don't even, like, I'm not even the biggest fan of saying, hey, go see your therapist. Because I know how it is in America, more than likely, you're going to be sent to a psychiatrist who's going to medically, or who's going to treat you medically by giving you pills that sort of maybe treat the symptoms, but nothing ever really treats the root of the problem, because it makes them more money to, you know, they don't want to cure you. But I'm a little pessimistic when it comes to our pharmaceutical companies in America anyway. It's all a giant scam to me anyway. The whole point of this was to say rest in peace to Marshawn Nyland. So let's move on. Well, let's discuss the trade deadline that ended last Tuesday. There were some big deals. The Cowboys ended up getting Quinnen Williams. That's a good deal. That's a good move, right? Good move for Quinnen Williams to leave the Jets. Sauce Gardner leaves from the Jets. He goes to play for the Colts. Jalen Phillips leaves the Dolphins and goes to Philly. He's playing, I think, tonight. And so those were sort of the big three moves. Kind of expected moves. We knew that those two teams were sort of actively tanking. And so I'm not surprised with what the Jets do. There are reports that the Patriots were trying to make a move for one of like two or three different Titans players, whether it's Tony Pollard or Arden Key. I know were the big two names being discussed. I've even heard Calvin Ridley was a name, and the Titans were being a little petty and saying we're not gonna trade to you because of the way our relationship with Mike Vrabel ended. I think that's a little petty, but it is what it is. There's fans or there's GMs like the Bills, I think what's his name, Brandon Bean, who said something pretty stupid, like all these fans expect a lot of trades because of Madden, and I think he was kind of throwing shade at Howie a little bit. But Howie does what Howie does. He's the best GM in football for a reason. How he gets some of these trades and rips off a lot of teams until Brandon Bean, just because you can't do it, it doesn't make it Madden, right? I mean, I think everyone expects a big trade deadline because it happens. And there's a price for every player, but the Bills just didn't get better, right? And I think he's being exposed as not being a really good GM. I'm just going to be honest with you, right? And we have more to talk about the Bills here in a minute. So the trade deadline, you had like three big moves. And they all sort of happen within, you know, the Colts got better. The Eagles got better. The Cowboys, they got better, but I don't necessarily think they're a contender this year. And so I don't think it necessarily means anything that they got Quinnen Williams this year. We'll see. I could be wrong. But I do think that's a big move, you know, for next year. That interior of that defensive line with Kenny Clark and Quinnen Williams there, that's dangerous, bro. I just got to say that, right? That's dangerous for... You know, and Jerry, that's that one player. You know, if Quinnen Williams can be, you know, half as good as Micah Parsons was, that's a game changer for that defense. And so that's that. And with that, we'll break down week 10. The biggest game I want to talk about is the Bills loss. You know, I want to talk about my Patriots, but we'll get the Patriot corner here in a minute. But I want to talk about these Bills for a second. I asked my brother, James is a Bills fan, if you didn't know, and I asked him, and I said, bro, you do know, your team does know that the Dolphins are actively tanking right now, right? How are you losing to a team actively tanking? And then it just got worse. It was like 40-13 or something like that, final score, and the Dolphins just absolutely obliterated the Buffalo Bills, making the Bills 6-2, two games behind. Or excuse me, 6-3, two games behind the Patriots. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. that's sort of like I just don't understand how that happened, right? Right? Like, there's no excuse for this. There's no excuse. Josh Allen had, like, two turnovers, right? And this is why I never bought into the, well, Josh Allen is the GOAT reincarnate type conversation just because he won the MVP last year, right? I never really bought that argumentation. And so, I just don't understand. Like, the Bills aren't good. They're window shut. They're now two games behind in the division. Really, that two games, though, is more like three because of the tie, of some tiebreakers. Like, you essentially, the Bills have to win out, and that includes beating the Patriots in New England, which is very possible. The Patriots seem to be playing better on the road than they play at home. It's crazy. Like, I really don't have words to just talk about, like, how crazy it is that the Bills are, you know, not the greatest team right now. Just a bit overrated. It's a little bit crazy. Other big games. I'm gonna be honest with you, I really didn't pay. I know the Saints beat the Panthers, which is kind of crazy. It's another one of those that are like, what's going on? Give me one second here. I apologize. Sorry about that. Tell you, so I'm sitting at this desk sometimes, it gets a little bit uncomfortable. And so I've been moving around. I don't know if you've been hearing me like mess with the mic a little bit. Just to be up in front, like I'm just trying to move the mic, trying to get comfortable in this seat. And we're going to hold the mic and stand up for the rest of this. I've been sitting all day, and I need to stand up a little bit. Anyway, I hope you don't hear a lot of me like moving around with the mic in the background. Let's go to Patriot Corner. Let's talk about the Patriots. I joke around a little bit when I say this. But can we get some respect on the Patriots' name? Right? I mean, this is a team that essentially all season long, it's been, oh, well, easy games, easy schedule. Excuse me. They haven't played nobody. Their schedule's easy. And I came into the season and made everyone aware that that's part of the reason why I was predicting them to go 12-5 was because they had an easy schedule. But a lot of people, you know, like I talked to, you know, like my dad and my brother James, and I was saying this off season, like, look at the schedule, look at the team, we're going 12-5, and they're like, nah, they ain't done nothing yet, predicting like 6 wins, and I just, excuse me, I feel that there's like this narrative with the Patriots where they have to do like the miraculous to get any kind of respect, right? Now, we have a question from Kara about this game. So I don't want to go too in depth and skip it. But we're going to talk about that question a little bit, cuz she essentially asked, was it the offense that won the game or was it the defense? And her kind of statement she added was that she thinks Drake was going to lose us the game because of that last interception that he threw late in the game. And I don't think the defense... So you got to understand, right, how I view the team is, how I've always viewed the team, is the Patriots always play best when it isn't a defensive-only team or a offensive-only team. Like, what I feel happens a lot of times, we'll take the Bills, for example, is the Bills have a really good quarterback. Like, I'm not going to take anything away from Josh Allen. I still think he's probably the best quarterback in the league from a talent standpoint. But Josh Allen is essentially that offense. James Cook is really good. Don't misunderstand me. James Cook is really good. But the offense runs through Josh Allen. And because of that, when Josh Allen plays bad, the Bills lose. And the Patriots have never been built, even though we were built around Brady. Brady could have bad games, and the Patriots could still win games. Or even 08 when Castle took over, and we still won 10 games because when Brady got hurt. Now, we didn't make the playoffs just because the NFC East was competitive that year, and the Jets decided they wanted to play good football for a season. But... the team wasn't built just around Tom Brady, right? It was built around, we're going to build a defense. We're going to build a special teams. We're going to build an offense. And the philosophy was always, you know your role, go do it. And if we all do our role, we'll win the game. And I think the Patriots are getting back to that mentality where, yes, Drake May made a boneheaded decision late in the game that could have cost us the game. But the defense understood their role and did their job. But we also had an offensive performance of from Travion Henderson. Had a breakout game in his rookie year. Right? You had Kyle Williams, rookie, first career touchdown on a big, like, 75-yard play. Right, and so we had some big moments from the offense. We had some big moments from the defense. Drake May made some big plays. Stephon Diggs made some big plays. Right, and so, you know, Kalyvon Chaisson and Milton Williams and that defense made some big plays. Right, Christian Gonzalez made some big plays guarding Abuka. Right, and so I don't give credit to either side of the ball as this is why we won. No, we won because we know our role as an individual and as a team, and we win because of that, right? I think the way the team is built, the culture Mike Vrabel's building, it's all about playing as a team and not celebrating, you know, that Drake May probably is going to win MVP. Right, at this rate that he's playing, if he continues to play this way, the only other person I could see beating him would be the Jonathan Taylor, the running back for the Colts. And so that's the only guy I think could beat Drake May right now. And so I don't necessarily, to answer the question, I don't think it's just one aspect of the game that won the Patriots that game. If I can be 100% honest, what won the Patriots that game was coaching. It was the strategy of football. If you didn't watch the game, at the end of the first half, it's, you know, we're driving down the field, we're getting ready to end the half, and Mike Vrabel makes the decision to run the clock out. And we're down, I think at this point, 14-3 or 10-3. I think it was 10-3. I think it was 10-3 or 10-0, something like that, that we were down at this point. And we drive the ball down the field, score with like 10 seconds left in the first half, basically. And or it may have been the last play of the half that we scored a touchdown. But anyway, the point was we drive it down, and we're not settling for a field goal. We're settling and saying we're going for it on fourth down, and we're throwing this ball, and Stephon Diggs makes a fantastic play, and we score a touchdown. We go into the half. I got to pull up the stats. I want to give you everything right. I don't remember it off the top of my head. But I remember this situation. I just don't remember the score. But we were going into halftime. I'm sorry. So it was 10-7. And it's actually the last play of the game. We do a seven, or last play of the half, we do a 7 minute, 16 second drive to take up the last 7 minutes of the half. And fourth down. And we go up 14-10 into halftime, where we could have settled for a field goal, tied it up at half, and we still get the right, but we get the ball back at the end of halftime. And so then we go down, and in 48 seconds, two plays, Travion Henderson then goes out and scores, and now we get the ball with 7 minutes left in the first half. Take all that time up, and basically in an 8 minute period of gameplay time, keep Baker off the field for 8 minutes, and we score 14 points and change it from 10-7 Buccaneers up to Patriots up 21-10. And that strategy, that trust in your team, that play calling, that ability to perform and execute, I think that's what won the Patriots the game. I said this. We won the game at the half because Mike Vrabel was able to outcoach and put out an amazing strategy to end the half. That way, when we got the ball and we scored and went up 21-10, I knew the game was over at that point. Right? We just flipped the game. 14 points from the Buccaneers. We flipped it 14. And I knew if our defense just did what it could do, right? And this was the first game of the season in week 10, right? So we're more than halfway through the season, and this was the first game all year that a running back got more than 50 yards on the Patriots. Like so I'm 100% confident that this team, if we continue to play this way, we have the Jets on Thursday. I think the hardest game remaining on the schedule, I mean, the Giants could always be a trap game. The Bills are the hardest game. The Ravens could be a trap game. The Bengals could even be a trap game, right? But I'm really confident in this team. I think it's practically impossible that we don't get 10 wins. I think we can find two more wins. And I think it's even more impossible that we don't make the playoffs this year. Like, if we utterly collapse to end the season, then I'm going to be completely shocked. But we have 7 games left, and I'm only scared of one. I genuinely believe that there's at least 6 more wins, on our schedule. I could see us being, I'm really thinking 14-3 at the worst at this point. I just really am. Because we got the Jets twice, we got the Dolphins again. That should be 3 more wins. I think we beat the Bengals. I think we beat the Ravens, so there's 5. And then it's the Bills and the Ravens, and those are going to be the 2 challenge games, one in Baltimore, one in New England, and both after the bye week. So, yeah, that's the Patriot. That's, so that takes care of that question from you. I don't necessarily think the Patriots are built like every other team is built, right? We don't have to, you know, there are some teams that are built to where if their defense doesn't perform, their offense aren't built to win games. The Patriots aren't that team. We have offensive production that's really good, right? But we also have a defense that's built, and we play the role we need to play, right? This is how I sort of take it, right? With that, let's jump in this segment here, and by predicting Week 11 games, and we're going to do that here. Just need to say, I did not do good last week in my predictions. Week 11, we start Patriots Jets. Without a doubt, the Patriots are winning. Commanders Dolphins. I think that what that's in Spain. Sorry, Spain. First game we give you, and it's a crap game. I'm picking. Both of these teams are awful. I'm picking Miami. I think Miami might squeak out a win here. Carolina and Atlanta. I'll pick Atlanta. Tampa and Buffalo. I'm picking Tampa. The Texans in Tennessee. We'll pick the Texans. Bears at Vikings. I'm going to go the Bears. Packers, Giants. I'll go Packers. Bengals, Steelers. I'm going to go Steelers. Chargers in Jacksonville. We'll take the Chargers. Seahawks at Rams. I'm taking the Rams. Niners at Cardinals, we'll go Niners. Ravens, Browns, we'll go Ravens. Chiefs, Denver. I need the Chiefs to win this. That's going to be my prediction. Detroit at Philly. I think Detroit will win. Cowboys, Raiders. That's Monday night's game. We're going to pick the Cowboys. So the Chargers are off. No, they're the Chargers. Not the Chargers. The Colts. The Colts are off this week, it appears. So that's good to hear. Let's go and finish out questions from the Discord then. B-Master asked this question. Why does Ridge Holland still get heat from ending Big E's career, yet other people like Owen, who broke Austin's neck, or Goldberg, who ended Bret Hart's career, are praised? So for Owen, I think Owen is praised because Owen's just a likable dude. And it's really hard to find a reason to hate Owen Hart. I also think that was like a situation that was like a freak incident. I know what Ridge did. The Big E was sort of a freak incident as well. I think this comes into, the fans in this generation are just different. That's honestly I'm going to be a real raw and relevant. The first thing that came to my mind, and this could be wrong, is that it's because the person who got hurt by Ridge Holland and I'm going to say it, it's because Big E is black. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but there is a very vocal element of the IWC that sort of has some influence of black wrestling fans who they are very loud when anytime something happens negative to black wrestlers. And I think they're some of the ones that are the loudest when it comes to the Ridge Holland hate. I think it's also easy to hate on Ridge Holland because he wasn't very good and he constantly either injured himself or other people to the fact that they even made it a gimmick. I don't feel bad for the Ridge Holland situation. You know, this is probably coming off of the idea that, you know, his name's been in the news here recently in wrestling world because, you know, he's out there saying, I need a GoFundMe to pay these bills because I'm injured. I can't get to work and I have a lot of bills and I don't have health insurance. Look, I feel you. It's kind of what you signed up for when you joined the company. I don't really feel a lot of sympathy for you because you knew what you were getting into. But, yeah, I just don't necessarily... I don't know if that's the only reason. I mean, Rich Holland wasn't a good wrestler to begin with. But I think a lot of the hatred, I don't hate Rich Holland because he injured Big E. Like, I understand that accidents happen. And I think a lot of the wrestlers have that same mindset. But there is a very large and vocal IWC movement where, you know, they're the same ones that complain that Triple H is racist, right? Because he doesn't book black talent, or a black talent loses or Montez Ford isn't on a pay-per-view card, and now Triple H is racist, right? But it doesn't make much sense to me, right? It's a bunch of virtue signaling to me. I think that's part of the reason, though, why Rich Holland has so much hate. I think it's part of the reason. It's not the only reason, and I think a lot of it, it's a mixture of that, plus Rich Holland wasn't good. He's an easy target because he's always hurting somebody. Whereas, like, Owen was a very likable dude. He was very good in the ring. And a lot of times, if you're very good at something, it's sort of like, now, I have to say allegedly here, you know, Ray Lewis allegedly killed somebody. We don't know for certain, so it's alleged. But it sort of gets talked over because he's one of the greatest middle linebackers to ever play the game, right? So, next question. Kara asked, you just got powers and are now a superhero. What is your superhero name and powers? And who in the community here will be your supervillain and sidekick? I didn't give a lot of thought to this. I don't know. I feel like We Too Deep in and of itself is already like a name. It's a really bad name, but like Batman exists. And Batman doesn't really have a lot of powers. I didn't put a lot of thought into this question, so I really don't have an answer. So I'm going to scramble. I'm going to scramble for this. So automatically, Kara's the villain. She's got to be the villain. Like, she's always been a villain. No, I'm kidding. I appreciate her, but Kara's a villain. I don't need a sidekick, right? Like B-Master is like he's you know, a good guy in the story, but he's not like the sidekick, right? I don't need sidekicks, right? We Too Deep don't need no sidekicks, and so. Now, what are my powers? That's crazy. I don't know. Let's contemplate some power. Here's the thing. I'm not a big fan. Like, I don't even know what kind of superhero, like, outside of, like, X-ray vision and, like, I don't even know what powers are out there, right? Let's see here. All right, so I'm going to be honest with you. I just put in the question into ChatGTP and said, hey, make me a superhero, right? Answer this question for me. So we're going to blame ChatGTP if this is stupid. This is crazy, bro. We're the superhero name. All right, I'm going to read what it said. It says, all right, let's cook something up for you based on your vibe, thoughtful, theological, introspective, but bold, rebellious, and creative. Here's what I would give you. The name is The Watchman. It's kind of, I'm beyond it, it's a little sus. Powers, discernment vision. Explanation of that. You can see the truth behind anything. Lies, motives, hidden corruption, even spiritual realities that others can't perceive. Interesting. Next power, the echo of judgment. That's crazy. When you speak truth, it reverberates with divine authority, exposing hearts, breaking deceit, and sometimes even causing the guilty to crumble under conviction. Kara, you're cooked, is what that's saying. Because I can crumble you with words, bruh. That's crazy. The sanctified flame. You can summon a holy fire that doesn't burn flesh but purifies the soul, burning away pride, hypocrisy, and darkness. Bro, I don't know what I would need to use that for, but Kara, you're cooked. And then the shield of faith, a radiant barrier that deflects attacks rooted in fear, doubt, or deceit. It gave me my weakness. My weakness, the burden of truth weighs heavy. Every time you expose evil or corruption, you feel a piece of that darkness pass through you, testing your resolve and faith. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's a crazy weakness, though, because I don't know. So there you go. I'm the Watchman. What you think about that one? But yeah, Kara, you're definitely the villain. Just because you're the only one I'm comfortable saying you're the villain, because you know I'm playing around. But plus, you know, imagine the Watchman in the movies just beating down whatever Kara's trying to be over here, this villain. I don't know what her villain would be. So I'm going to ask it. I'm going to ask it, create for me a villain. This Kara's going to portray the villain, right? And here's what the Whisperer is the name. That's crazy that it made it a female already. The name, the alias is Celine Valle. That's crazy. First off, Spanish. Look, Spanish women are my kryptonite. So, you know, nah, I'm playing. Lies that sound like truth. She moves through whispers, gossip, and emotional manipulation, feeding doubt into the hearts of believers, turning friends into skeptics, and the world into a battlefield. That's crazy. That's crazy. Her powers. The silver tongue. Her words can twist perception itself. She can make lies feel comforting and the truth sound cruel. Kamala Harris. No, I'm playing. Not really. But so once she speaks something into one's ear, they start to believe her version. So you're the left. Kara's just a liberal. No, I'm playing. She has the veil of emotion. She draws power from chaos. The more people react out of emotion rather than truth, the stronger she becomes. Antifa. No, I'm playing. Maybe. The Echo Network. Through gossip and rumor, she can be everywhere at once. One lie whispered in a crowd allows her to hear and influence anyone who repeats it. An empathetic corruption. She senses insecurity and amplifies it, turning guilt, envy, or pride into weapons against her enemies. Her philosophy is the truth divides, but lies unite. I just want people to feel safe, even if it costs them reality. Her rivalry with the Watchmen, here's what it describes here. You two are mirrors. You stand for truth that wounds before it heals. She stands for comfort that heals before it kills. She targets different communities, spreading division with soft words and emotional appeal. And you're the only one who can see the strings she is pulling. Your battles aren't physical. They're wars of conviction fought in heart. Bro, this is literally just good and evil, which is crazy because that's what all superhero movies are anyway. But, yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy, bro. And then ChatGTP was like, would you like me to give her a redemption arc possibility? And the answer for that is yes, because I want to see what ChatGTP is cooking here. Is Kara going to become my sidekick as well? Right? Okay, this is crazy. This is going into acts and everything. Let's see what happens here, right? So, let's read this. Act 1. After years of manipulating hearts, the Whisperer begins to notice something terrifying. Her own reflection starts to fade. Every time she speaks another lie, her image in mirrors grows dimmer. She can't remember her real voice anymore. All she hears is the chorus of the whispers she's created. In a confrontation with the Watchman, she tries to twist his mind, but his shield of faith holds, and instead of retaliating, he speaks one piercing word. When was the last time you were told the truth? When was the last time you told the truth? That question lingers. It begins to undo her, not with guilt, but with longing. This is crazy. I don't like where this is going. Because this redemption arc is already talking about longing, and I'm already getting uncomfortable. Act 2, the Whisperer hides from her followers, tormented by the voices of her own lies echoing back at her. The power that once fueled her now devours her, each whisper feeding on her despair. The Watchman finds her again, not to fight, but offer truth. That grace can reach even those who have been drowned in deception. She rejects it at first, hissing that light only blinds, but deep down the words stir something she haven't felt in years. Conviction. He leaves her with words etched in the wall as he departs. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. In her lowest moment, the voice falls quiet. This is Act 3, by the way. In her lowest moment, the voices fall quiet, and for the first time, she prays. Not a spell, not a plea for power, but a broken whisper. Help me hear you instead. Obviously talking to God. That's when the whispers vanish, the shadows recoil, and the same voice that once deceived thousands becomes still and purified. She is reborn as the witness, the one who now exposes the lies she once spread. She travels between cities, revealing how falsehood hides behind emotion and urging others to anchor themselves in the truth. Her silver tongue becomes the voice of clarity, cutting through confusion and fear. The veil of emotion becomes the mantle of empathy, allowing her to feel pain but speak healing through it. And the echo network becomes a call of testimony, linking those set free by truth into a growing chorus of redemption. And in the final scene, the Watchman meets her again years later. She thanks him not for saving her, but for not fighting her. And he simply replies, I didn't need to win the fight. Truth did. Banger. Send that to Marvel. I'm kidding. I'm going to write that novel, though. It's coming. No, I'm playing. But yeah, that's all we need right there. That's a arc right there. Let me know what y'all think of. ChatGTP wrote it. Not me. Anyway, so she then ends with one final question. Now, We Too Deep, you now get to restructure American politics, change things up, rewrite or amend things in the Constitution. What are you changing? This might take some time. What are you changing? For context, like change term limits, lobbying, judicial bias, more consequences, additional laws, more seats, less seats, anything you want to change. First off, this type of power corrupts. So let's hope no one's ever in this position to do this. But if I was, So the first thing that I would do is, this is going to sound, this is going to sound misogynistic. I'm removing the 19th Amendment. But I'm also actually wrong. I'm amending the 19th Amendment, that women can vote. I still think women can vote. So the reason I said it's going to sound misogynistic is because there is a movement on the right that says, well, women shouldn't vote because all women vote liberal. And for the most part, that's right. And if you paid attention to last week's election, young women, the young liberal women, were the biggest voter bloc that voted for Democratic candidates that want nothing to benefit this country, right? And so the first thing is, none of these are partisan by any means, right? In fact, the first thing that I thought of when I saw this question would really have a lot of Republicans or conservatives a little bit upset at me, and is I'm changing how we view the Second Amendment. This is one of those issues where, as a conservative, I lean a little bit more moderate. I'm not full liberal. I don't believe we should take guns away from everyone. I do think we need some more common sense laws, right? And so I even have people I talk to who will hear that and be like, well, what are we talking about? I don't believe if you are mentally disabled, you should be able to own a gun. I don't believe if you are depressed or suicidal that you should be able to have a gun in your possession. I just don't. I don't believe in red flag laws, which are basically like, I believe you're mentally insane, so therefore the police can take your guns. I do believe we need a process. I think if you've ever been diagnosed with a mental illness, you should have a mental... I believe you should be able to own a gun, but I believe that every year you should have a mental check, and if you fail it, your guns get removed from your place of residence. I don't believe anyone who is actively mentally ill or disturbed should be anywhere close to weapons as dangerous as guns. I think this is very unpopular in the conservative circles I'm in, where, like, I even have someone that I talk to on a weekly basis who's, you know, very pro-gun, and that's like his only political stance, right? And we disagree a lot on a lot of these issues. I ask the question all the time because he's in one of my church groups that I'm in that we meet on Fridays, and they talk about the guns that they have all the time. And I ask the question, like, he was talking the other day that he can shoot a rifle from 1,200 feet away, or 1,200 yards. I think it was actually 1,200 yards. So he can shoot, like, I mean, this is a ridiculous distance, by the way. Like, 1,200 yards, I want you to understand that that's 12 football fields away. And a lot of these guns aren't made to go that far. There's a lot of modifications that need to be done, from my understanding. But the question that I asked him was, in what situation do you need to be able to fire from 12 football fields away and still be able to hit center mass? Like, what do you think is going to happen, right, that you would need to do that? And the answer is always, well, it's just fun. Well, that's great and all, but for your fun, right? So I'm not saying take guns away, but I do think we have to limit. Like, first off, the first thing is, the Constitution gives you rights that they don't protect you from everyday citizens or from private businesses, by the way, right? They protect you from the government, right? So the freedom of speech protects you from being discriminated against by the government, meaning the government can't force certain things to not be said. But private businesses are not the government, right? And so, first off, we got to understand that. There's not a lot I would change in the Constitution. I would more so just say that the way we should interpret the Second Amendment was that it was given to protect the First Amendment against the government. So I don't think that covers hunting and sport and all of that. I think you could use your gun to go hunting. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to. But I think that there are common sense things we can do in the idea of gun control where it doesn't take away your right to own guns. I think we just need to have a few more safeguards, right? And that's just me personally. Some other things. She mentioned term limits in her question. 100% term limits for Congress. I think no one should ever be able to be a career politician. I forgot who said the quote, but there was essentially a quote in a base. I'm summarizing because I don't remember it word for word, but it essentially said, when being a politician becomes someone's day job, that's when corruption starts to happen. And it's literally, that's what these career politicians do. They campaign to get elected. They spend the next 2 years after being elected doing nothing. And then they start campaigning again to be reelected. And there are a lot of people who literally spend their entire life campaigning, winning elections, getting ready for the next campaign, and never actually doing anything that they were elected to do, right? I would remove all lobbying from companies and corporations, right? And there's a lot more that I would do that would fall into the idea of like Christian nationalism, where, for example, I believe that the American government should be governed by the principles of Christianity. Therefore, you should be you. I would, if I was like the president, or if I can make a change to anything, I would require, and this is actually how the country was run at the time of the colonies. 11 of the 13 colonies required you to be a Protestant Christian to run for government. I think the other two, like Maryland was one that didn't because they were Catholic, and I forgot the other one. But even, I think it was Vermont. Vermont was the 14th state after the Revolution. They were the 14th state added to the Union, and I believe it was Vermont, who, if you were a preacher, you were not allowed to run for government. Because the understanding was government or politics and church should not mix, which I 100% agree with as well. And so I do believe that our government officials should be of a Christian worldview. That doesn't mean we demand the citizenry to be Christian, but the people who run the government should be, right? Because that's the way we're governing. I'm sure there's a lot more I could think of. I don't want to take a lot of time. There's a push now in the Trump administration to remove medicine ads off TV. 100% behind that. That would be one of the things I would do. I would remove the Federal Reserve. That is not federal. It's not actually a government building, and it's not a reserve. It is a private corporation that has put us in a lot of debt. We owe a lot of debt to the Federal Reserve, and they just keep printing money. Anyway, I would end the Fed. This one's kind of okay. This one is a little bit, the next two are going to be a little bit controversial depending on how you, view politics and what your worldview is and how you see the world and politics and stuff. The first is I would end public education. That's not something you do immediately, though, because you can't end a system and create a vacuum, because nature abhors a vacuum, meaning whatever replaces that is just going to be just as bad as the public education system. I wouldn't end the actual agency. I would promote homeschooling and mainly homeschooling, and self-education and private schools and charter schools. But the problem with that is even like the charter schools or the private schools tend to teach the same crappy education that we get. And so just, I would promote homeschooling, at some level, and try to get people out of the public education system to where there's no necessity for it. And then 50, 60, 70, 80, maybe even 100 years down the line, if that continues, we can then actually end the public education system. That basically is just, was created literally to create communists. And that's literally, it was founded by communists and promoted communism. And the entire system is communistic and like 100%. If you look at the history behind the public education system. And the most controversial thing I'm going to say in this question is I would end the welfare state. This would happen on day one. If I was voted president, I would end the welfare state. Completely scrap it. Outside of those who need it, but I would completely scrap it. I would give the funding the money that we give in SNAP and food stamps and housing assistance and all of that, I would give to local charities that I believe would much better manage that funding, right? So for the longest time, our country didn't give out welfare, and it benefited very well. People were still taken care of. You didn't have to depend on the government. If you needed help, you would go to local businesses or charities or churches. And that's part of the reason why, like my church, for example, we have a food bank and we give out food to the community all the time, right? We were even like, they mentioned a couple weeks ago with SNAP being paused because of the government shutdown. Hey, we need more food donations. And my church delivered, bro. My church always delivers, right? Some generous people in that building, right? And, but that's how the country ran, right? Churches gave out charity, and the government handled government issues. When the government becomes the church and does the charity, government becomes God. And you begin to depend on the government. And that is not what the government is created for. The government's purpose is to do two things. Reward those who do good and promote their safety and judge and execute justice on those who do bad. Right? Protect your people and punish those who do evil. Right? That's literally the job of government. And it's not to be some welfare state. That's the job of individuals. And charities do that a lot better than the government does. So I would end welfare. I would give all of that budgeting to different community centers. And then one final thing. I would take our defense spending, and rather than station soldiers overseas where we don't need to be, I would place them on the borders. And so we don't need a wall. We don't need a wall. If we just put the military there. Also, Ukraine and Israel will stop getting handouts for free. And a lot of that money will help go to establish Mexico and to take care of the cartels, 100%. And then, because that's the problem, right? I don't think we address the illegal immigration, like the root of the illegal immigration issue. From Latin American countries, it's the cartels and the destabilization of those nations. And so rather than building a wall and I'm all for deportations of illegals, 100%, because that's another thing. All immigration stopped until we can solve the issues we have with our immigration. They deport all the illegals. No one's allowed in until we can fix our country, right? 100%. That's my immigration policy. Take care of the cartels, help Mexico stabilize. Then if Mexico flourishes, guess what? That's why everyone hates the idea of, like, America first. They think it's, like, racist or whatever, right? Well, no. Americans should want America to thrive in the same way that Mexicans who are native to Mexico should want Mexico to thrive. And if Mexico's thriving, Mexicans won't enter America illegally because they could just stay in Mexico where it's thriving. And so nationalism or this is actually the best system, where I want America first, I want America to thrive because I'm an American, and Mexicans should want Mexico to thrive because they're Mexican, and Italians should want Italy to thrive because they live in Italy, and you get the point, right? And so I would definitely promote that. I don't know, I keep talking and more things come to my mind, but I think I'm going to end the episode there. Some great questions. Let me know what you guys think of this episode. And until the next one, I'm Way Too Deep. I'll see you on the next episode. Have a great rest of your week. So hit that.